Welcome into the Uteni Baseball Show. I'm happy to share that the band is back together. I'm your host, Anthony Schullo, and today we're getting a little nerdy. We're crunching numbers, we're doing the maths, we're talking stats. Today we're asking, what are sabermetrics and why are they so important in the modern game of baseball? As usual, I know two guys who love talking baseball numbers, and that would be my co-hosts and brothers in baseball, Parker and Adam. It is good to have the full crew back today. Parker, how goes it?
It goes pretty well, man. I had my first men's league game, as I've been alluding to in past shows. I did it on last Sunday. First organized baseball game in 12 years. I went 1-for-3 with an RBI and 2 stolen bases. So I am feeling on top of the world. I couldn't be more excited that baseball is in full swing and that the season's going as well as it is. So that's good. Adam, how have you been, man?
Good. Just loving the baseball season as it goes into full swing. I'm kind of coming to terms with my Texas Rangers, your 2023 World Series champions, not really winning as much as I'd like. You know, we're just lucky to be at 500, and you know, it's not as bad as other teams, but I'm struggling a little bit. How are you, Anthony?
I'm very well. Let me sit here and play my little tiny violin for you.
You know what? You know, you could probably look into having two previous, you know, multiple times Cy Young winners coming back for your team. Oh, wait, no, you guys already have that, so I don't want to hear any complaining.
Oh, let me give a little preview to the folks here. Today, obviously, we're talking sabermetrics, but next week, folks, we're going to be doing a whole review of what the baseball season has been up to this point, a whole kind of April in review. So stay tuned for that. Adam's going to have a lot of opinions about his Rangers. I'm going to sit here and basically have a sob story about the White Sox, and Parker is going to do Parker things. So stay tuned for that next week. But today, folks, we are talking all about sabermetrics. We're going to talk about how sabermetrics work in our grand game, kind of some of the history around sabermetrics and how it has impacted the game of baseball. And did you know that there is a baseball stat called X-Bacon? Did you? Did you not? There is one. It's called X-Bacon. Sounds delicious, but it is not bacon. Hang tight, and we'll learn a little bit about that. Before we do, Adam, why don't you go ahead and give us the scouting report today? Hit us with a trivia question.
I would love to. So every year, the Naismith Baseball Hall of Fame presents an award to a broadcaster for major contributions to baseball. And what I need from you two lads is, who is that award named after?
Ooh. Okay.
Wow.
I'm not going to lie. That kind of throws me for a curveball.
Real quick, just for the listener's benefit, that the Cooperstown Hall is, the Naismith is the Basketball Hall of Fame, right? I lived right outside Springfield. I'm pretty sure Naismith is the Basketball Hall of Fame.
It is.
Okay. Just making sure.
My apologies, but it is the Baseball Hall of Fame.
We're getting our Hall of Fames mixed up. But if we go to Cooperstown to the Baseball Hall of Fame, there is that annual award for broadcaster for me. Okay, so this is why I was getting confused. So the whole Naismith thing threw me off. I'm not a basketball guy, so Parker, thanks for throwing me a bone there. But I will say, I think I know who this is. I think I know now.
Oh, man. You're going to have me on this one, I think. I got a
really?
Good guess.
Okay.
But cool. Yeah, no, I think, I don't know. I got a good guess, an educated guess, but outside of that, I don't know. Oh, okay, wait, yes, I do. I know who this is.
Yeah, you do. We'll circle back, because I think this one's a pretty obvious one now that it's just singing for Parker. All right, guys, we'll go ahead and revisit that scouting report at the end of our time here together. But let's dive into today's topic, which is all about sabermetrics. And sabermetric is one of those baseball buzzwords. If you've been following the sport, even for a little bit of time, you've heard about advanced stats, otherwise known as sabermetrics. And kind of this concept of sabermetrics is really kind of a new and improved kind of second level addition of statistical measures in the game. And, you know, sabermetrics in general really originated you know, or was coined by Bill James. The actual word sabermetric was coined by Bill James. You're probably wondering what the heck saber has to do with anything. Well, actually, saber is an acronym, S-A-B-R, which stands for the Society of American Baseball Research, and that organization was founded in 1971. So SABR really is just in reference to that Society for Baseball Research, Sabermetrics, again coined by baseball writer and statistician Bill James. So that's actually where sabermetrics comes from. But there is an interesting story to be kind of to be had here when it comes to sabermetrics, especially when we look at kind of the traditional stats that we know about the game and some of those more advanced stats that tell a much greater story. So Parker, why don't you kind of just give us a sense of those differences between kind of those traditional stats versus what would be considered an advanced stat or a sabermetric?
Yeah, so I was really excited when we decided to talk about sabermetrics as a whole. And honestly, the term sabermetrics, while still nearly ubiquitous throughout the sport and everything like that, I think people have almost like not retired the phrase to a certain extent, but it's being that the Society of American Baseball Research is where a lot of these came from. This is the term that we have used to describe them since a lot of their creation. Now, a different way that we like to refer to them nowadays is like advanced metrics and stuff like that. So the reason that we use what we like to call these advanced metrics and sabermetrics is because in a game like baseball that has had so many distinct eras with different rules that have shaped that era, for instance, like the dead ball era, you're going to have statistics that in the dead ball era are actually normal and were actually considered maybe even below average, that if they were to happen today would be something that would, like a batting average in the dead ball era could easily approach 400. If you had somebody bat 400 in the year 2024, we would be talking about it for the next 60 years. Like, it is genuinely one, and I know that for a fact because the last person that did it, we've been talking about it for 80 years, right? So it has been an extremely evolved version of the game that has been played year over year since its inception, because we're talking about a game that's more than 100 years old. So what is a sabermetric? Why would we use them? Well, we have things like a couple of my favorite sabermetrics are OPS plus and ERA plus. If you compare an earned run average, just a standard ERA from 2024 to an ERA back in the dead ball era, you might say, oh, wow, all the pitchers got a lot worse since the dead ball era because so many more runs are being scored and the average earned run average is so much higher. Well, then that's where sabermetrics, that's where advanced metrics come in, because the ERA plus stat is something that we can look at that has actually been adjusted from era to era, year over year. It adjusts for what we call the run environment, or the amount of offense that exists in the game of baseball year over year. And we're actually able to almost one for one judge how dominant a pitcher is in 2024 and put a number right up against another pitcher that pitched maybe in the dead ball era or just after the dead ball era. So if somebody has a 100 ERA plus, they were the average pitcher in baseball, whether that was in 1920s or the 2020s. So a lot of times these metrics are able to help us standardize whole eras of baseball and actually give as much of a just comparison that you can between players of different eras. And then, of course, I can get into a whole other discussion about how it gives us a little more insight into a player's real productivity and stuff like that. But my favorite aspect of sabermetrics is the context that it gives and the ability that you get to compare vastly different periods of baseball.
That's right, 100%. Now, you know, Adam, as kind of the newer fan, as part of our crew here, I mean, when you approach sabermetrics, I mean, is this something that you find handy? Did it take you a little bit to kind of get into it and kind of sink your teeth into it? What was that experience for you when you kind of came across these sabermetrics for the first time?
So to answer that, I'm just going to set the scene to everybody. Just how new I am to this game. I just caught the Cooperstown Baseball Hall of Fame, Ace Smith Hall of Fame. So I'm coming at it from that point of view. But sabermetrics, two things for me. It's part of the reason why I love the game, and that goes into the fact that we've been using non-advanced metrics really for most of the game's life, which provides me with so many rabbit holes to go down when I'm and when I'm researching particular metrics. And two, for, as a new fan, it's still the thing that I'm trying to catch up on. You know, I understand the traditional metrics in ERA and batting average and et cetera. But things like wins above replacement and a few other ones that are more advanced are the saving metrics that I'm still trying to catch up on. And when I saw you drop this topic for the show, Captain Anthony, I had two thoughts. I was like, oof, what am I going to add? And two, I get to sit back and listen to the savants talk. And, you know, just listening to you then, Parker, I gained even more appreciation of sabermetrics. And that's me as the new fan, Anthony. I understand, but I don't understand.
I think that it's, well, I was going to say, I think that it's important to point out, too, that I love this stuff, and like I still don't know what Sierra really is, right? Like there are definitely sabermetrics, there are definitely advanced analytics, and there's so many different things. Scroll down a Fangraphs page one of these days, and you're going to see I don't know 99% of what these statistics are. But sometimes you find yourself, whether it's, you know, laying in bed at night or at the end of the day, and you find yourself, oh, what is WOBA? Let's look at WOBA and just kind of maybe Google it and find out. And honestly, a lot of these are very easy to Google, and it'll come up with those big bold block text at the top of the Google search page, and it gives you a little context as to what each one means. So not to like, I don't want to discourage anybody. I don't want to, you know, scare anybody away from advanced analytics. Just know that at the end of the day, nobody really knows. Not that nobody, of course, there are people that know what every single one of them mean, but like, we're all still learning this. This is something that we're all growing in. There's going to be things and terms thrown around every single day in baseball that I don't know exactly what they're talking about. But for me, my mentality is, oh, it's a learning opportunity. Let's go look and see what we've noticed as far as trends go with this particular thing I wasn't aware that we were tracking.
And that's exactly the way to look at it, Parker. You know, I appreciate that you don't want to scare anyone. And certainly that's not the goal of what we're doing here. If anything, we want to be very real with you in that, hey, you know, explore these sabermetrics. You're not going to know all of them. It's going to take some time to learn all of them. Obviously, as Parker said, you know, everyone doesn't know all of them, but it could be a little intimidating at first. And, you know, here at the Utini Baseball Show, we want to kind of be your guide and help you through some of that. And we're going to, at the end, kind of give you some really great places to go kind of dive into these sabermetrics that isn't too overwhelming. But, you know, really, sabermetrics, like I said before, is a heightened baseball stat. When we look at some of those traditional stats, you know, they're ones that, you know, we know and love. They've been with us for years. Things like batting average, home run counts, RBI counts, on-base percentage, all of that. But, you know, these sabermetrics really do the same thing that traditional stats do at the end of the day, right? They're valuable insights into a player's ability, and it's data to inform team strategy, right? At the foundation of everything here, all of these front offices are using this data to build teams and not only gauge current player performance, but predict future player performance. Now, Parker, you brought up kind of some really good benefits to using sabermetrics that is important to make sure we all kind of understand and wrap our heads around is, you know, these traditional metrics like average, home runs, RBIs, and then even on the pitching side, looking at just the pitcher's wins or losses and just their straight ERA, that really has a limited scope, right? I mean, these are a limited view of player performance. They leave out things like regular on-base skills, defensive prowess, situational effectiveness. When we go to a ballpark and you look at a scoreboard and you're seeing things like exit velocity and launch angle, those things are not incorporated into core traditional stats. I love that you said earlier, oh, well, it incorporates, you know, different eras and different, you know, these different factors. One of those things is ballpark factors. Like if I'm hitting a ball or pitching a ball in Coors Field, how is that affect, you know, the way a ball is hit off a bat or the way a pitcher's ERA is affected rather than doing it in Great American Ballpark, right? So all of those gives us a really fun way and a more accurate and all-inclusive way to look at this sport.
100%. In baseball, we have the two very, very unique things that I think make sabermetrics and advanced analytics absolutely necessary for full context. And they are, first, that every team plays in a different field with a different playing surface than every other team in baseball. Every single team has different dimensions in the outfield. Every single team has a different surface that they play on, whether it's AstroTurf or grass, things like that. And then also, on top of that, baseball plays almost double. Actually, no, it is double the amount of games that any other major sports league in America plays. The next up is basketball. They play 82 games in their regular season. Baseball plays 162. So, like, almost to the number, double what basketball plays. Now, what does that mean? Well, in baseball, you get somewhere between 200 to 250, depending on the game, 200 to 250 pitches in a game. Times 162 games, that's a lot of data. And that's, you can analyze very specific trends on a per park basis with that much data. And that's kind of what this attempts to do. It attempts to take the things that baseball fans, basically, you didn't know how to describe in the past and put a number to them. Like, for my number one thing that I always go back to is back in the day when scouts were scouting back in the 50s, they would say things like, and you've heard it before in movies, maybe you've heard of your friend say it, man, the ball just sounds different coming off that guy's bat. Well, guess what? That's exit velocity, guys. That's what exit velocity is. And we have a number that we can describe for that. That's hard hit rate. That's barrel percentage. When you start putting numbers and quantifiable pieces of information, all it basically does, even if you don't pay attention, even if the casual fan doesn't pay attention to it, the mere existence of these stats makes the cream of the crop even creamier, if that makes sense. Like, it makes the best players be the best players because it gives them things to work on. Oh, I have a trouble barreling up. I have trouble barreling up inside fastballs. So now he's working. That player is working on barreling up inside fastballs. And guess what? The pitchers have access to the same information, so they're throwing more inside fastballs. And it's this self-fulfilling prophecy and this never-ending cycle of information making the game even more competitive than it was on it, making it more competitive on Tuesday than it was on Monday.
Yeah, that's a great way to frame that. And I actually want to come back to that in a little bit as we talk about kind of how the game has changed because of sabermetrics. There's arguments to be made that the game has changed dramatically in both directions because of sabermetrics. So we're going to pin that because we're going to come back and talk about it. Now, one of the things I did want to bring up, though, is Parker, you were alluding to this. And hey, Adam, I get what you're saying, right? Like, it's just even, you know, you're learning all of it. Parker and I are still learning all of it. We're really in this together, learning all of it. And the reason why we're learning all of it together is because you look at some of these stats and it's alphabet soup, friends. I mean, X batting average, you know, WOBA, X WOBA, X WOBA bacon. I talked about the bacon stat. We'll talk about that in a second. Sierra, percentage of this, percentage of that. It literally keeps going. There's tons of them. So, I mean, you look at sabermetrics and, you know, of course, that gained popularity in the last, you know, decade or so, more than a decade, but in the last kind of 10 years, I think it really has lifted off. But
with the advent of StatCast in 2016, it really just took off to a whole new level.
Oh, 100%, 100%. And it even went a step further, folks. So, I mean, there wasn't even sabermetrics, but more recently, there's this concept of X stats. So all these stats where you're seeing that little X in front of things like X bacon is kind of a special set of stats that essentially tracks performance only off of vertical and horizontal launch angles, exit velocities, batted ball distances, game time temperature. So things in an calculations in an attempt to make things more objective once the ball is in play, which is pretty remarkable because if you look at a stat like X bacon that I told you about earlier, X bacon is purely the batting average on contact that includes home runs. So when that ball is hit and the contact is made, including home runs, what's the batting average on that? Now that is, again, even taken sabermetrics to a whole other level. So this is not going to stop. This isn't something like, oh, we have sabermetrics and we have X stats, we're done. You know, I fully expect that these will evolve as the game evolves.
100%. And one of my favorite things to look at these days as to how we are embracing these advanced analytics as a community is when you look at a player who had an offseason like Cody Bellinger. Cody Bellinger spent an entire offseason needing a contract and really, really wanting to sign his big money deal for his career. For those of you who don't know, in 2021 and 2022, Cody Bellinger had what he would probably consider of like two extremely bad seasons. This is a guy who won an MVP in 2019. And in 2021, he had an OPS plus of 44, which means 100 being average for OPS plus across all of baseball, all time ever. Every single average hitter every single year has a 100 OPS plus. So if Cody Bellinger had a 44, he was honestly a horrifically bad hitter that year. He had an 81 OPS plus, so again, very bad hitter in 2022. And then the year before he hits free agency in 2023, he had a 134 OPS plus, so 34% better than the average hitter in baseball. So one of the best hitters in baseball, genuinely, at that point. Goes into his contract year, and immediately you can see that these advanced analytics are so important because Cody Bellinger didn't really get a great deal. He got kind of not that great a deal, and that's because no matter if he did have that 134 OPS plus, the stats that were being harped on by front offices were his hard hit rate. He had a pretty subpar hard hit rate, and we can see that maybe the guy got lucky. Baseball is a crazy game, and we know people get lucky all the time, and front offices have all this information now that they can use to be like, I don't really want to pay Cody Bellinger, because not only did he have two bad seasons out of the last three, but even the one good one he did have wasn't hitting the ball that well. Even if it was dropping on green a lot of the time, the hard hit rate's really not there. So you can see how the game changes year over year just based on the information we now have.
Absolutely the case. And it's driving the way that, you know, as I hinted to earlier, the way that teams are looking at players and performance and being able to project that out. And it's very helpful for really everyone to understand, you know, how you're going to see these stats into the future here. And we're already seeing this. So Parker, you brought up things like OPS plus as an example of one of those like plus stats. So anything that you see a plus after, so OPS plus, average plus, WRC, weighted runs created plus. So as Parker said, it's really 100 is average. Anything over is a percentage over average. Anything below 100 is anything below average. So when you see that, that's exactly what you're looking at. Now, those are very common. You'll see that more often than not in the sport.
You'll see them on broadcast nowadays.
100%. Yeah, you'll often see average home runs RBI, weighted runs created plus or OPS plus. Now, yep. Parker, I want to have you talk about, this is probably one of the most foundational sabermetrics, and that is WAR. Could you talk us through how WAR works and what does it represent?
So the best part about WAR is that there are two of them, right? So WAR stands for wins above replacement, and it's become one of the most ubiquitously used advanced analytics in the game today. Couple sports, baseball and basketball in particular, have become, I won't say obsessed because that gives it a negative connotation, but have become very interested in finding one number that you can use to describe the best players of all time, or describe a player's overall worth at one glance. And I think it's very, very important that we have something like that. I genuinely think that it's something that makes the game a little more digestible at a glance, because we, like I said, there are a lot of games going. You cannot watch 162 baseball games if you're watching as much of your favorite team as you possibly can. We're people. We have lives. And if you happen to miss, you know, half of a season because you had, you know, a big thing coming up in work and you're trying to close this deal and you just weren't able to spend time watching baseball, and you come back and you watch your first game and you go, let me do a little research to find out how the team's doing, who's the best player on the team, sort by WAR. Who's got the highest WAR on the team? Odds are that guy's probably your best player on the team. So WAR takes into account batting average, defense, the ability to work a walk, the ability to find your pitch and hit it hard, hit home runs, drive in runs, run the bases. All these things are taken into account and come into play when you calculate WAR. Now, there are two major forms of WAR. Like I said, two flavors of WAR that we typically use. That's BWAR, Baseball Reference WAR, which you can find on baseballreference.com. Well, probably the site that I spend the most amount of time on, if not first or second, like, or third most amount of time. And then the other major form of WAR that we use a lot of the time is FWAR, Fangraphs WAR. They weight defensive performance a little differently, and so that's why sometimes you'll see discrepancies. Typically, I like to go with Fangraphs WAR, especially recently, because they switched over from using older defensive analytics into using now more recently developed and more recently refined defensive analytics. So personally, I use F4. 99 times out of 100, you're probably going to see most people use BWAR, though.
Yeah, absolutely. Now, I'm going to go to Adam here for a second. And I want to ask you, based on the season up to this point, and we're going off of Baseball Reference, so BWAR, okay? And if they have the ability to assign WAR to teams. So what do you think, Adam? This is just total shot in the dark. Is the team ranked WAR for the Texas Rangers? 1 through 30, where do they rank in WAR right now?
I was only looking at WAR recently just to see how the Texas Rangers were doing individually.
I would love if you guessed this right. I'll be very impressed.
I'm going to go middle of the pack, I reckon. Middle of the pack, I'll go with 14.
You're really selling your guys short. They are ranked 7th right
now. Wow. My guess was 14 as well.
That's a fair guess. I could see why you say that. Who is 30th?
Do you really want us to go there? Is it the Chicago White Sox?
It is.
Are the Guardians number 1?
The Guardians are number 6th. Number 1 is the Atlanta Braves.
Do we
need to spend a bit of time here, Anthony, just digesting your feelings?
My little heart can barely take it no more.
Well, okay, so real quick, Anthony, while you wallow in your sorrows, I do want to bring up something I forgot to mention when talking about WAR. WAR, wins above replacement. I said what it means, but I didn't tell you what it means. Wins above replacement literally refers to the amount of value that a player provides over that value of a player that would be what we consider replacement level. You would call somebody up from the minors or trade them away to get a better player in their position. And so we are literally trying to track how much value in terms of how many wins that player gave to their team versus a team that did not have them on there, that versus a team that had a replacement level player in their position. So for instance, who do you think is the number one wins above replacement player on Baseball Reference? Adam, I'll ask you.
I'm going to go with...
Don't think too hard about it. Mookie Betts, really? Okay, no. So I'm talking about career WAR, not this season, like career of all time.
I don't know, Babe Ruth.
Yep, it's Babe Ruth. It's Babe Ruth at 182.6 wins above replacement. And honestly, it's not even close because the next guy is 15 WAR behind him, 16 WAR behind him, Walter Johnson at 166. So a couple older guys who really, really, and I one thing I like about WAR is these guys really kind of should be at the top, because when you think back about players that had one person impact on their rosters, I don't know that you could come up with a list of two better guys, Walter Johnson and Babe Ruth. They were back in the day when that was more possible than it is today. So I like that that's kind of reflected. But I just wanted to take the opportunity to try to explain what the term wins above replacement even really means.
I do have, if I may, have one question on that. I use Fangraphs for my WAR research. and they talk about batting more and pitching more. And for me, my simple mind immediately goes to someone like Shohei Ohtani, who would have quite the number on both. And then they get added together, and he has this outstanding unicorn level or. Would that be the probably the is that a correct understanding of batting and pitching? Do they just simply put it together and they?
It's not additive.
Shohei has a certain level. Okay.
So it's not additive, and I'm not a mathematician. I don't know exactly how they compile it, but I know that ironically enough, Shohei gets hurt more than he is helped by combining the two kinds of war. And I want to say that, and I'm not 100% on this, but I want to say it's because that is a game-to-game basis where he is literally only graded on the thing he primarily did that game. So if he's pitching that game, then he gets pitching war for that day. If he is hitting primarily that game, he gets hitting war for that day, even though on the pitching day, he also hit. So he gets actually doesn't get to take a piece of both sides of the pie. He actually only, I think, is hurt more than helped, as if I understand it correctly.
Okay.
He kind of just changes a little bit of everything. He makes everything wonky, friends. That's just kind of how
he breaks
works.
My brain for sure.
That was a great way to kind of wrap up that first section there to make sure we all understand war appropriately. But we're going to talk a little bit more about how sabermetrics, has permeated the game and what impacts that sabermetrics has had on the game and that could have in the future. But before we do that, want to go ahead and share just a few messages. Adam, why don't you tell the people about the new Utini show?
I'd love to. And if you love the work we're doing here at Utini, we have so much more, and it's all you can't miss content. You definitely won't want to miss the Utini show, our ultimate gateway to exploring fandoms. So those who don't know, the Utini show was once the living force, the staple of Utini and a bedrock of the Star Wars podcasting community, but it has since evolved into something that embraces all fandom. It's led by Corey, Eric, Charles, and our local Houston Astros fan, Wes. Not going to go all in on that. That crew is back and essentially better than ever. They talk about their favorite fandoms. They explore those they are curious about and the fandoms that the fans are curious about. You never know what they're going to get when the guys get together. Be sure you're tuning into the Utini show every Monday on the Utini YouTube channel and get ready to expand your fandom. And if you do catch it on YouTube, the setup is amazing. The conversation is great and you will laugh many times.
I love the Utini show. It really gives like this daytime talk show vibe almost. Like they just sit around and it just they just BS with each other, man. It's so fun to listen to that group of guys get together. And honestly, speaking of great shows, I do want to talk for a second. You guys 100% need to be tuning in to one of our longest running Utini Network podcasts, the longest running Utini Network podcast, Legends Look Back. It is a wild and wacky exploration of the Star Wars expanded universe, covering so many different things, including, but not limited to, Emperor Palpatine coming back from the dead the first time, hotshot X-Wing pilots and their bad love advice, which Star Wars villain would win in a beauty contest. That one gets me every time. The guys at Legends Look Back are always having a ton of fun. Jared and the gang, they are currently doing a year-long deep dive on the new Jedi Order series, which still to this day is the most ambitious Star Wars storytelling initiative. Episodes are available wherever you get your podcast. Plus, they do a live show every other Tuesday night on the Utini Vault YouTube channel. Don't miss out on Legends Fun with the Legends Look Back crew.
Always good stuff going on at Utini and always great stuff going on with Utini Network or Utini Podcast Network. But gentlemen, I want to transition to talking about kind of what sabermetrics means for the sport as a whole. And I find that there's no better way to start talking about that than talking about one of my favorite films, Moneyball. Now, I think Moneyball is a perfect kind of encapsulation of everything sabermetrics and how teams use sabermetrics to actually run their teams in their front offices. Parker, Why don't you tell us a little bit about, to you, what did Moneyball do for you in helping you understand how sabermetrics are utilized in the sport?
Just to keep it as brief as I possibly can, Moneyball is a movie I watch every single year, minimally once a year, at least during spring training. It completely changed the way that I think about the game of baseball. It was the reason that I started researching and getting into advanced analytics and sabermetrics in the first place. And it does a really good job of describing, honestly, the biggest success story that baseball analytics and advanced analytics have had in driving the construction of a roster in order to take down what was kind of the established, like, status quo, which was spend money on people that hit home runs and had high RBIs. And Billy Beane and the Oakland Athletics did a really good job of breaking that status quo. And the movie itself could not have been portrayed any better than it was by Brad Pitt, Jonah Hill, who, fun fact, Jonah Hill is a made-up character. He represents like three different real people. But Jonah Hill deserves an Oscar for that movie. He just absolutely incredible piece of filmmaking. It is written by Aaron Sorkin, my favorite screenwriter of all time, and just love it.
Yeah, it's a great film, and it really does highlight this shift. And so, you know, when you look at teams now, and you look at teams that are low revenue teams that do not bring in a lot of revenue and therefore have low payrolls, you're looking at teams like the Cleveland Guardians, you know, the teams like the Tampa Bay Rays, obviously still the Oakland Athletics. But if you go back and look at teams like the Rays, these are teams, and Cleveland Guardians, teams that have been successful operating with low payrolls. And that comes from the foundations of this Moneyball concept out of Billy Beane and his athletic team. So, you know, it was this concept of essentially, like Parker said, getting away from these kind of quintessential star power players and using a limited payroll to be able to identify in the margins using advanced stats. What team could we put together based on war, you know, based on these advanced stats, based on OPS plus and these trends? Can we get the right group of guys together to actually put together a functional team that's going to be productive on the field? Now, you fast forward to today. What owner in baseball wouldn't like to not spend a lot of money and still win ball games? They would all like to, right? You have some that are more aggressive than others that want to go out and are okay spending $300, $400 million. But a lot of them, you know, owners are...
Steve Cohen.
Owners are rich for a reason. It's because they spend their money cautiously and wisely. So, you know, for you, and this could go to Parker or Adam, and I almost want to ask Adam this because I would love his perspective on, now that you've been exposed to sabermetrics and you're kind of seeing how the game's presented on television and you're seeing how people talk about the game and it's very metrics driven, is it too much for you? Like, do you like it? Does it get in the way sometimes? I mean, what do you think about how metrics have permeated the sport?
So firstly, I do love it, and that's from my ability that I can either go in all in on metrics one day, or just come into a game and just want to watch home runs and have a beer and just enjoy a dude throwing a ball at another dude and that dude hits the ball into the stand. I think that you can find your happy middle ground, and that's what I try to do. I know that my personality, if I allow myself to Google a metric, that's it, I'm done for the next 4 hours. And it may even take me away from the game that I'm currently watching. So that's what I do. It's up to the person to embrace or, you know, keep them at arm's length or allow them in every so often when you get curious. And just on Moneyball quickly, I watched that before I was a baseball fan, primarily because Brad Pitt is a certified dreamboat. And then, you know, I watched again as a fan who understood sabermetrics at a really basic level. And I found it really cool how the Las Vegas Athletics were able to build a team, you know, essentially out of nothing.
Dirty.
And then to link it into my World Series champions, Rangers, you know, when we went to the Wild Card Series against Tampa Bay, and we are one of those teams who at the time were willing to spend a lot of money, I was kind of freaking out that we would go to Tampa and lose, because they had built a team essentially on sabermetrics and had shown through you know, pitching, for example, that they could take down the big spenders. And when we got through that, I felt better. However, before it, I was, you know, the Moneyball effect for me was like, here we go. We're going to go down there and just get swept. And then the money meant nothing. Turns out it meant everything. But at the time, you know, it was frightening for me to go up against a team built on math.
So 100%. I want to bring that out because I think that there is definitely shortcomings that come with this mentality that a lot of people, I think it actually gets glossed over. There has not been one of those traditional, when you think about like Moneyball, super low payroll teams, there has not been a single one that has won a World Series. I don't know that you can count the 2014 and 15 Royals as being super successful as Moneyball teams because they still had a top half of baseball payroll. They were still spending money. And outside of the Royals, I know it's in the top 10, but I think it might be even top five that you have every single World Series winner has had a top five payroll, basically for the last, you know, 30 or so years. Outside of the 11th overall payroll that the Royals had when they won in 2015. But one major case that a lot of people will go to show you where analytics went too far and it dictated decision-making in a way that didn't help the game was in the 2020 World Series in Game 6. Blake Snell's on the mound. Blake Snell, if you just started paying attention to baseball, you're really familiar with Blake Snell because he was the hot ticket free agent pitcher going into this past offseason. He ended up signing with the Giants. He went on the IL literally today or yesterday at the time of recording. He was pitching in the sixth inning of Game 6 of the World Series. He was up 1-0 on the Dodgers. He was dealing, in a way he had not all season, probably his best game pitched, absolutely dominating the Dodgers. And his pitch count was in the 70s, I want to say. And Kevin Cash, the manager of the Rays, came in. And he pulled Blake Snell and brought in Nick Anderson. The Dodgers immediately took the lead, didn't look back, won that game, won the World Series subsequently. And that is one of the things that baseball fans will always look to until it's disproven to say, you can't lean so hard on these advanced analytics. You have to be careful because even in the post-game interview, Kevin Cash said, I regret the decision only because it didn't work out. But, you know, I felt like the process, meaning the information he was given, said he felt like the process was right. If we had to do it over again, I would have the utmost confidence in Nick Anderson to get through that inning. So he's saying he would do it again. And Kevin Cash is famously one of the most analytically driven managers for the most analytically driven front office in baseball, the Tampa Bay Rays.
You know, I admittingly go back and forth on this because if someone's posing the question to me, is the game too data driven? 6 times out of 10, I wake up in the morning and probably say yes, quite honestly, from my perspective. And not to say that statistics are bad or data is bad or anything. I think it keeps the game fun. It's another way to look at the game. And I enjoy kind of sabermetrics as a whole. But, you know, I think to kind of one of my favorite people in the game, Joe Maddon. One of my favorite people in the whole game.
Oh yeah.
And the way he looks at all of this and how it plays a role in our sport is pretty amazing. And I tend to agree with him. It's his thoughts always been stats and sabermetrics and all this data. It's great. It's a great supplementary tool. And it helps us kind of guide how we put together the lineup, how we react to something in a game. All that. That's all fine and well. But he subscribes to a thought that I tend to as well, and that is these are humans playing a game.
Yeah.
And there is something to be said about the feel of the moment, the gut instinct, the momentum, things that, if I'm being honest, make baseball really special, right?
Yeah.
And just sports in general, right? Like when you have the biggest moments in our game, almost all of them were someone defying odds, stepping up in a big moment when they were not expected to, and that's beyond stats. It's often the guys that don't have the big stats and weren't expected to step up, and they did. That is what makes the sport special. And I do worry sometimes that it's drowned out exactly by what Parker's saying. Like well, here's the script for today's game, because before the game, I went over all these stats and all these advanced metrics, and so I know in the fifth inning I'm doing this, and if this happens, I'm doing that. Just the feel of the game, I think, is very important and oftentimes gets left behind kind of now more than ever.
I think a really good example of that is one of my favorite managers in baseball is Brian Snitker of the Braves, a guy who can do things like bat his best hitter leadoff in Ronald Acuna Jr., but also do things like leave his pitcher in if he really thinks he can get out of an inning. Does a good job of maintaining the data analytical driven side and the human element of the game as well.
That's exactly right. And I think the appropriate way to approach the sport is a good balance of both. I think that if you strike a good balance, the game is really special. Now, guys, we could talk about sabermetrics for a long time. We can keep going and going and going. Quite frankly, we could probably have an all other episode about sabermetrics. But I do want to go to a very special edition of the Wild Pitch today. If any of you listened to the episode, our last week's episode, where Parker had not joined us, I will say I got very excited when Adam brought up the topic of the Wild Pitch, and I was like working on it right after that episode. I was very excited. So Adam, why don't you remind the folks what today's Wild Pitch is?
I'd love to, Anthony, and I think you spoke about your excitement there with a slight understatement of what I saw and heard during that recording. Everyone, you don't see the video that we see as we record these shows, and the smile on Anthony's face was humongous, and I was just happy to bring some happiness into his 3-21 life that he currently leads. But
so kind. So
today's wild pitch, today's wild pitch, lads, was you had to give me your greatest baseball broadcaster of all time. And Anthony, noting that you won last week because I needed clarification on Parker's pick and he just wasn't here to give it, could you please go first?
Well, I was so happy because there's two things I love most about our game, quite frankly, the ballparks and the broadcasters. I think they breathe so much life into this game. And the only way that I know how to talk about this gentleman from a Wild Pitch is, well, I guess poetically, because nobody on the face of this earth broadcasted baseball like Robert Frost wrote poetry. So please allow me, in this Wild Pitch, to wax poetic. This incomparable voice, straight from the Bronx, is hailed as the epitome of baseball broadcasting excellence. Across an astonishing career spanning 67 years. 67 years in the booth. His legacy is defined by his unmatched storytelling, longevity, and profound impact on the sport. At the core of his greatness is his unparalleled ability to weave captivating narratives that transport listeners to the heart of the game. His broadcasts were more than mere play-by-play commentary. They were masterpieces of storytelling, enriched with historical context, poetic language, and vivid imagery. Through his words, he painted a vivid portrait of baseball that resonated with fans of multiple generations. And not many broadcasters can say that they've had that impact. Memorable anecdotes, witty quips, timeless wisdom endeared him to audiences worldwide. And perhaps he's called more magical baseball moments than anyone in our game. Sandy Koufax's perfect game in 1965. Kirk Gibson World Series walk-off homer in 1988. And Hank Aaron's record-breaking 715th home run in 1974, not to mention calling 5 different World Series. Whether recounting the exploits of baseball legends or sharing personal reflections on the game, his words left an indelible impression on all who listened. Yet perhaps his greatest legacy, honestly, lies in the countless memories he created for all fans. From historic moments to the everyday triumphs, his voice provided the soundtrack to generations of baseball fans, forging a deep and lasting connection between broadcaster and fan. In his final broadcast, he highlighted that deep connection to the fans. And this is what he said.
You and I have been friends for a long time, but I know in my heart that I've always needed you more than you've ever needed me. And I'll miss our time together more than I can say. But you know what?
Ha, I love that. I love that. And as a baseball fan, to my very core, I miss him. I really do. And he wasn't even a broadcaster for my favorite team. But that's what happens with the greatest baseball storyteller this world has ever known. That's my wild pitch.
Man, I'm getting emotional. Oh, my God. I know. The guy
I got
described is literally the voice of summer for me. Like, the amount of times I've just sat there and listened to him broadcast the baseball game, even if I'm not watching, just sitting there doing homework or something, like, wow.
That was special, Anthony. I know the emotion in it. Your pitches of late have always been great, but that one, it just felt special. And Parker, my friend, you have a hill to climb, especially with how you reacted to that pitch. All yours, my friend.
Yeah, no, I know. I kind of just handed him the trophy, didn't I? Well, okay, so here's the deal. I have another broadcaster that I don't think gets all the recognition that he does. There's a very specific fan base that does love him to the end of the earth, but the rest of baseball needs to know. Born in 1935 in Princeton, Indiana, initially broadcasting from 1969 to 1976 for the California Angels, this man, he really came into his own for an expansion baseball team in 1977. The team that he broadcasted for did not have a winning season from 1977 to 1991. There was not a single winning season in that time. But even on his Wikipedia page, it says that this man made the game's appointment television. He was considered one of the main attractions of the game. Think about how important it is for an expansion baseball team to have draw, to have that star power that makes them something to watch. And in no other case in baseball history has that star power come from the broadcast booth. He was named twice the Washington State Sportscaster of the Year. He threw out the ceremonial first pitch for his team in 1999. He was also added to the the Nintendo 64 version of Ken Griffey Jr.'s Slugfest as the announcer in that game because he was such the face of awesome baseball. In 2000, he won the award, and this is why I've remembered what the name of the Scouting Pitches Award is. He won the award for the best broadcaster in baseball in the year 2000. And in 2007, he was recognized at the end of that season as having called 4,817 of the possible 4,899 games for the franchise that he was the main play-by-play man for. This man is absolutely irreplaceable. He has coined some of the most iconic calls of all time. And to close out my pitch, I will give you perhaps his most iconic call of all time, immortalized with a bronze statue in the ballpark of the team that he spent all those years calling for.
And here comes the 2-2 pitch to Edgar Martinez. Down a fastball swung on, hit the deep center field. Bernie Williams goes back and it is get out the line, Brad, and the mustard this time, grandma. It is the grand salami, and the Mariners lead it 10-6.
We can't hear it too well, Parker.
Oh no! Well, I'll throw it to Kyle in post, and he'll have to make sure he throws it in there.
Yeah, for sure. But I'll tell you what, Parker. I did not expect you to go in that direction. That is a surprise to me.
I'm a big fan of John Boy's content, and I watched the entire 4-hour history of the Seattle Mariners. And in that, he gave at least 30 minutes to just how iconic this man was. And when you hear the call, we'll have Kyle throw it in post. You're going to hear that he called all those games for the Seattle Mariners and became one of the main things that drew fans to the ballpark. Break out the rye bread and the mustard, Grandma. It's a grand salami.
Oh, goodness.
Well, we did hear a little bit of it, and I love that these broadcasters that you've thrown at me today, they just have broadcasting voices, and they just felt like it'd be a good time listening to both of them, and it'd be a relaxing time sitting on the porch, you know, just listening to the baseball game. I'm going to go to you first, Parker. I love your, by the sounds of it, out of the standard kind of pitch here, just behind the scenes, everyone. I love seeing these two talk about their pitches and ensuring they don't pick the first one. And, you know, you, Anthony, you look to have picked what anyone would have potentially picked. And I was like, wow, man, what's Parker going to bring to the table? So thank you, my friend.
For the audience's benefit, it was so obvious who Anthony picked that I already had the soundbite queued up for his pitch without him asking me, because I knew that I had picked who I was pitching too late to have gotten who Anthony pitched.
That's funny.
Anthony, your pitch was wonderful. Like I said, just emotional, just from the heart, you know. And for me, I did love your pitch, Parker, but I think this one, I'm not going to go outside the box. I just want the greatest. And your reaction to his pitch put the icing on the cake for me. And like I said, it was hard to come back from that. And you spoke about poetry, Anthony, and me and my friend here on my computer, we have a little poetry for you, mate. And it goes like this. Anthony's grand pitch, broadcasting prowess unleashed, victory resounds. My friend, you are this week's wild pitch winner. Please tell me who will be in my broadcast booth.
Oh, my goodness. Well, I couldn't be more thrilled to give you the greatest baseball storyteller and broadcaster of all time, Mr. Vin Scully, longtime broadcaster of the Brooklyn Dodgers and the Los Angeles Dodgers.
Deservedly so. I knew it was an uphill battle trying to win this one, but man, I'm just, Vin Scully is the voice of summer.
Absolutely. Who'd you have, Parker? Share with the world.
I had Dave Niehaus, the longtime broadcaster for the Seattle Mariners, just an absolutely iconic voice.
Yes.
It is hard. He. It's not fair to him to have gone up against Vin Scully, but I wanted to make sure that the people at least have a name to Google, because some of this guy's work and some of the calls that he had, like I said, he's got a bronze statue at the Mariner Stadium. So do some research and go check out some of his most iconic calls.
100%. Well, we're going to wrap up the show like we do every week, and that is with the scouting report. Before we do that, Adam, why don't you give us a preview of what the wild pitch is next week?
I'd love to. So I'm looking for a leader, guys. I'm looking for a clubhouse leader. And from my basic understanding of the game is that usually comes from a catcher. And those who show a particular level of leadership skills become managers. The greatest catchers become the managers. And what I'm looking for is, give me your greatest catcher turned manager in baseball history.
Jake Taylor. Just kidding.
I'm going to message Eric now with my pick so you can not have the slam dunk.
Okay. Go ahead. I'll find a good one. Go ahead. That's a really good one, Adam. Really looking forward to picking that up next week. But before we wrap up for this week's show, why don't we circle back on that scouting report question? Now that we have the name of the Baseball Hall of Fame, Adam, go ahead and re-give us the question.
So the Naismith, The Baseball Hall of Fame presents an award annually to a broadcaster for major contributions to baseball. Who is this award named after?
Parker, we both know who this is. Why don't you take it away?
Yep, it is the Ford C. Frick Award for Baseball Broadcasters, not named after a baseball broadcaster, named after a former baseball commissioner.
Bingo.
That is correct. Well done.
I would hope that someday, no offense to Ford, I hope they rename it after Vin Scully someday.
There we go. 100%. That, what a great way to end this week's really awesome show. And that'll do it here, folks, for this week's episode of the Youtini Baseball Show. If you are already a member of the United on Patreon, we greatly appreciate you. If you want more baseball statistics content, we actually have something for you. Check out our baseball stats guide, How to Make Sense of Baseball Statistics, written by yours truly. You can find that available now at youtini.com. A special thank you to Brian Dooley, Carl Sander, Michael Fry, and Raymond Bezinski on our high council, and our captains James T., Ashley Inglis, Colton Fife, and Chris Carrizo for their amazing support. Don't forget, you can interact with our baseball team on X. You can follow the show at Youtini Baseball, and you can find each of our individual X handles right there in the show bio. Conversation doesn't stop here, folks. We're always talking baseball in Discord, so be sure to hop into our baseball channel and join the fun there. A huge shout out to our behind the scenes team. We have our editor Kyle, who makes us sound good each and every week. And of course to my friends Adam and Parker for being baseball rock stars and stat connoisseurs. Support for this show and all Youtini Network podcasts comes from the United Patreon community. At the heart of the Youtiniverse, the United is where our most passionate fans gather for a deep exploration of all types of fandoms. Star Wars, Marvel, F1, Taylor Swift, baseball, the list goes on and on. We'll catch you next week here on the Youtini Baseball Show.